This is the Real BS Show.
That's right.
Coming on again and enlightening you with the... Well, lately we've been talking about religious stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Who was the first one?
The Jehovah's Witness?
No, that was the second one.
That was the second one? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, Scientology.
Scientology, yeah.
I don't think that's religion. That's something else.
No. No, but this one that we're doing today is up that alley.
What's that, Mormons?
Yeah.
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 You know, we keep squashing all these churches. Ain't going to be none left.
I don't know. You might find one you like, Bill. I don't know.
Yeah, right. But, ooh, we should start our own church. That's what we should start.
Well, we kind of have one, right? The BS church, you know?
Yeah, the BS church.
The church of BS.
Everybody can join that one.
Yeah. Well, in
as long as you send in your donations, that's all that counts.
Yeah, 10%. Yeah. Actually, we'll make it cheaper. We'll lower. We'll do like 8%. How about that? You know,
well, 5%. Just send something. Who cares?
Send, anything.
I don't know. Whatever you can afford. That's crazy. That is crazy. 10%. How do they know that you're donating 10%? They must know you must look at your IRS things, you know, to see how much you gross every year.
That was the original IRS, you know.
Whew, boy, that is nutty.
The thing about this one
maybe it's in the Bible. Is it in the Bible?
Yeah,
the 10%.
Yeah,
10%.
It's.
Wow.
There's a reason for it, but that's going off tangent here. But in this situation here with the Mormons is that they're very similar to the Scientologists, that they believe that they're to be their own God, you know? So there's a lot of similarities in that regard.
Mormons are their own gods?
They believe that they become their own gods.
If you cross all the right
dots and I's and D's.
T's and
dots. And
wow. Yeah. So you can be your own God.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. Then you wouldn't have to donate anything.
Yeah. Yeah, people donate to you. Know. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, this stuff's crazy.
You get your own special underwear too, Bill.
Mormons got their own special underwear. Yeah, I think I did hear that. Yeah. Maybe you told me that.
Yeah, I did before. It's an odd thing to me.
What is that supposed to do?
Because I protect you.
Protect you?
Yeah.
Was it like bulletproof or something?
No.
No? What good is it?
It looks like old-time swimwear. Like, you know, if you go back to the early 20th century, the earliest 20th century, where you see pictures of people going to the beach, and they're wearing, like, not long sleeve, but short sleeve shirts and swimming trunks from the 1900, like,
grandma,
1905 or something like that.
Grandma used to wear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the women would wear full gowns, you know, to swim. And but anyways, it looks the same, the swimming attire, but whatever. We got some information on this about these guys, you know. I bet
there's all kinds of it. Yeah. I think their founder was pretty special right there. Yeah, that's quite a story.
Came from Wayne County and went west through our area here and then kept on going west.
Probably went right through Union City.
Probably.
Dropped off a few relatives.
Well, they took a few off because that was pissing a lot of people off at the time because he was taking women as wives as they went along. So they basically were taking married women, even sometimes girls even young as 14, as wives.
As he traveled along, he'd scoop up some more.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy cow.
So, but what is missing is he had a lot of fraud beforehand. So he was defrauding people, and he has a lot of arrest records of doing that along the way. Of course, you'll hear Mormons, you know, criticize that and say, oh, it's not true that he was being framed.
Well, yeah, he was kind of a bad guy before he got started, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I heard something like that, yeah.
Famous for defrauding. He had a lot of defrauding. You know, in my business, I don't hire people that have check fraud, for instance. It's an example of something I just, you know, I technically do discriminate against. Legally, I'm allowed to. Because you don't want somebody in your doing your work that has fraud history like that because it's not, you know, that's bad business. It looks bad. And he was doing that, and people just ignore that. They're ignoring the evidence in front of them of how he acted before forming this religion.
I don't see how people hire anybody. You know, everybody's lying.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's just... Whew. Okay, so you got a little 5-minute get going kind of thing that just kind of
kickstarted off.
Yeah, kind of, you know, overlays or, you know, just get us on the right path here.
Yeah.
Okay, well let's listen to something like that.
Mormons, a group most commonly known as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, are a Christian denomination basing their beliefs on the Bible together with the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon was published by the church's first prophet, Joseph Smith, in 1830. The story goes that Smith was contacted by an angel called Moroni in 1823, who gave him instructions on where to find golden plates inscribed in a cryptic text referred to by Smith as Reformed Egyptian. These plates, containing what came to be the Book of Mormon, told of how Jews sailed to the Americas from Israel 600 years before Christ, whereupon they established an ancient civilization, the evidence for which has so far thoroughly evaded archaeologists. 4 years after Smith learned of the location of the plates in Wayne County, New York, Moroni gave him permission to translate them into what turned out to be 16th century English, not dissimilar to that used in the King James Version of the Bible. Smith mostly translated the plates by staring into a hat containing special seer stones. Only rarely did he actually consult the plates, which were always hidden from view. Smith would also recite his translation from behind a curtain so that his transcriber couldn't see what he was doing. After the book was complete, the golden plates were returned to the angel Moroni, meaning their existence could never be independently verified. Mormons see nothing untoward in any of this, neither are they unduly worried by Smith's record of arrests and criminal charges for various crimes, including bank fraud, treason, destruction of property, and extorting people by claiming he knew where to find lost treasure. Mormons are especially unmoved concerning Smith's polygamous family arrangement of 49 wives, some of whom were as young as 14. As far as they're concerned, God needed a prophet to represent him in the latter days, and Joseph Smith was the perfect candidate for the job. Since Joseph Smith's death in 1844, Mormons have had a succession of prophets who, along with a quorum of apostles, continue to dictate the beliefs and practices of believers worldwide. Apart from the golden plates thing, some of the more bizarre Mormon beliefs include their practice of baptizing the dead, their secret temple ceremonies, their wearing of magic underwear, and their prohibitions on coffee and swimming for Mormon missionaries. Mormons also have some rather disturbing practices, including worthiness interviews, in which young Mormon boys and girls have been interrogated and even groomed by bishops with extremely inappropriate, sexually explicit questions. The church also has a history of racism. For over 100 years up to 1978, black men of African descent were barred from the priesthood, and the Book of Mormon even includes a story of God turning the skin of an ancient people called the Lamanites dark as punishment for their evil. Then there's the history of homophobia in Mormonism. Official church materials have listed being in a same-gender marriage among the criteria for apostasy. The church has also been criticized for actively supporting Proposition 8 in California, a piece of legislation later ruled unconstitutional that was aimed at excluding gay people from marriage. It could be that after considering all this, and especially if you've seen that South Park episode or the Book of Mormon musical, you have no idea how anyone can take Mormonism seriously. Well, bear in mind that, as is the case with many religions, not all Mormons are recruited as adults. Many are born into the religion and indoctrinated with Mormon beliefs from childhood. Even those who do join as adults may well have underlying insecurities or emotional issues that make them susceptible to embracing beliefs that, though irrational, offer them some comfort. Bottom line, if you happen to know a Mormon, please show them kindness and don't assume you can convince them to abandon their beliefs by laughing at them. When you've spent years or decades believing something is true, no matter how nonsensical it is, it can be almost impossible to stop believing. That's why it's important to be nice and show patience and understanding if you have a friend who is a Mormon and you are interested in helping them.
Wow, there's a quickie, a 5 minute introduction,
right,
to the Mormons. I don't know. I just can't. What in the world are people thinking? I mean, look how big the church is. I mean, I've been out there in Salt Lake City, and gigantic place. I mean, holy smokes. And, you know, that didn't come from nowhere. I mean, these people, a lot of people donating a lot of money.
There's a lot of money put into it, yeah.
Am I allowed to sniff my nose while I'm talking?
Yeah, it's kind of rainy day in Georgia.
Yeah, it sure is. It's been raining for 5 days now, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, won't stop, and it won't warm up either.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's better for the solar eclipse that's happening, you know, on Monday.
Yeah, maybe all the clouds will be gone by Monday. You can get your eyes burned out of your head. Jeez. Oh, shoot. Well, you know, let's see. You got some more. We should get some more Mormon stuff. Do you remember this guy by the name of Warren Jeffs?
Warren Jeff, yeah.
Wow, what a story that is. And they kind of broke away from the Mormons a bit and ran off and did his own thing.
Yeah, they were fundamentalists.
They went over to Texas and built some great big place out in the desert or out all away from everybody. And then he found out what he was doing out there.
They
were chasing him all over. I think they caught him in Nevada someplace, a speeding ticket or something.
He had 78 wives, and he abused boys and girls. It didn't matter.
This Warren Jeffs guy? Yeah. Yeah, he was a creepy-looking dude, too.
Yeah,
but he had a big bedroom up in his castle that he built out there in Texas, and a giant bed, and I don't know. I don't know what all he did, but I guess it wasn't pretty.
No.
And I think is he still alive?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's still in prison.
In prison then.
He did try to commit suicide in 2007, but that didn't succeed, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but he's an odd, creepy dude. You know, that you know, I think that's what Joseph Smith was in a lot of ways.
He's trying to follow the leader.
Yeah, I mean, that's your example, you know, your shining example.
Yeah, right.
In this next segment, I think kind of gives you a very short, crisp understanding, I think.
Well, this Mormon thing, are they saying that the Bible is okay, correct?
Yeah, they believe that the Bible, the King James Bible specifically, is completely fine, but they add their own book, the Book of Mormon. And that's what they believe. They believe that some Jewish people came to North America, and that's where the Native Americans came about. And that the Jewish people made an empire in not just our area here, but kind of like in the Great Lakes area. Huh. And they claim that's what the Lost Tribes went to. Which is not true by
evidence. That's where the Indians come from?
Yeah, that's what they believe. But the problem is they don't believe that most Indians are Jewish, just some. The point is though, genetics evidence shows nothing at all to this effect at all. The DNA shows that, no, there's no Jewish people in North America before Columbus.
So really, Joseph Smith is the founder of the Mormon religion.
Yeah,
he started the whole thing.
Yep.
I think he died in Illinois or something.
Yeah, he got murdered in prison.
They threw him out the window or something.
Yeah, he went to prison, and then the mob came and basically tore him to shreds. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they threw him out the window, and he died when he hit the ground.
Yeah. No, you sure he didn't die in the air, maybe? No, I'm joking.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
No, it's when he hit the ground.
That's the fun part. You go to amusement parks and pay for that.
Yeah, that's free.
It's just that. When you hit the ground part, that's the part.
That's not the fun part, yeah.
So, if you got some more information or anything, you know, I mean, you always come up with some neat stuff.
Sometimes, yeah.
So I'm ready to be entertained and educated. Educated,
yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, if you educate me, maybe the Mormons is my choice here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't sound like it right off the bat. Okay, Seth, take it away.
Hi.
Hello?
We're representatives of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Mormons.
Our prophets have sent us to deliver a message given from God.
Prophets? Message?
Yes, we're here to tell you that God appeared to the prophet Joseph Smith in 1820, and he chose Joseph to restore the truth.
He did.
Yes, God told him Christianity had become completely corrupt.
So, you guys aren't Christians then?
Oh, heavens, yes, we're Christians. After all, the name of our religion is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
But you just said Christianity was all wrong.
It is, but because of Joseph Smith, we know ours is the only true church on the earth.
So, what's so bad about Christianity?
Well, you see, everything you know about God is basically wrong.
First of all, God is not a spirit. He's a perfected man with a glorified body of flesh.
Huh?
We believe a long, long time ago, on a planet far, far away, our God,
Heavenly Father,
was just like us. He was born mortal. Eventually, his efforts were rewarded, and he was exalted to godhood, joining the other millions of gods in the universe.
Millions of other gods?
Yep. Maybe even billions.
Oh, that hurt.
Oh, sorry.
As he grew up, he worked hard at becoming perfect, just like all other gods did before him. Today, Heavenly Father lives on a distant planet.
Next to the star, Kolob.
He lives there with our Heavenly Mother having spirit babies.
That's us.
Yes, that's us. We all live there as spirits before we were born. We just don't remember.
We come here to Earth to get a chance to work towards perfecting ourselves, so that we'll be worthy enough to be exalted as gods.
So you're saying you're going to become a god?
Well, yeah, I hope so.
And just what do you mean by perfect yourselves?
Well, we have to be completely faithful and obedient to our church and its rules.
Rules?
Well, just a few. Basically, just no drinking, no smoking, no gambling or swearing, no coffee.
Or tea.
No watching rated R movies, fornication, stealing, or lying.
No shopping on Sundays.
Dress modestly.
Go to 3 hours of church every Sunday.
Read the scriptures.
Believe in Joseph Smith.
Get baptized.
Give 10% of your income to the church.
Don't question the leaders.
Serve in the church.
And most importantly, temple work.
Temples? Is that what you call your churches?
No. Temples are special buildings, used only for secret ceremonies and rituals that are needed for godhood.
So what do you do in these temples?
Well, first we get anointed as kings and priests in heaven. Then we receive special holy underwear that we must wear for the rest of our lives.
Special holy underwear?
Yes, special because they have sacred symbols on them that give us protection.
Then we're given a new name, the one that we're going to be called in heaven.
Then we're taught signs and passwords called tokens.
We have to memorize them to be allowed into Heavenly Father's presence.
If we show the signs to the guardian angels and tell them the passwords, they might let us in. And if we've earned it, then we will become exalted as gods.
And can start creating and populating our own worlds.
So just what is the secret sign and password?
We can't tell you.
We swear oaths not to talk about them.
So they're secret?
No, they're sacred.
But you can't tell me?
Right.
Then that's a secret.
Well, fine, it's a sacred secret.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is the only people who become gods are Mormons. What about everyone else who died hundreds of years before your temples were even built?
Well, that's the best part. We do all of the ceremonies on behalf of those dead people, so it will count for them in the afterlife.
Yeah, we get baptized for the dead, do the signs and passwords for the dead, and even do marriage ceremonies for the dead. Did I say something wrong?
The Real BS Show.
Yeah. Here we go. What do you mean you say something wrong?
Yeah. So I got a question for you, Bill.
Okay.
So did you ever have the Mormons come to your house at all?
I think I have, yeah.
And
yeah.
Were they dressed in like a tie and a white?
It seems to me they were, and I think it was on Gillette Street.
Uh-huh.
And I just told them to buzz off.
Yeah. I was in the Army with, I think, two Mormons, and it was, you know.
Army?
Yeah.
They don't join Army.
Yes, they do. The Jehovah Witnesses don't.
Oh.
The Jehovah Witnesses are against, you know, Pledge Allegiance and joining the military and things like that. But where the Mormons are not opposed to joining the military at all. And the two guys that were in, they were different times periods, but the first guy was hardcore nagging us that we were wrong on everything and that Mormonism is the only way forward. And he was like, he was constantly proselytizing, you know, trying to preach to
us. He was still there to shoot a rifle and kill people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But he was hardcore that, you know, we need to be Mormons. And we were like, dude, chill out. We're all Army. You can't be like pushing this. This is wrong. You know, he just never got the memo that that's weird to push that hard on people that don't care. And I remember that, how he was vicious about it in a lot of ways. He'd get angry if people challenged him at all. And especially if they said, I don't care, he'd get mad. But the other one was, he was more quiet about it and more reserved, but still it was that element of there. You could tell that they were raised in something that was different than the rest of American culture. And this is why, you know, I kind of look back at it and like, this is a weird part of American history that this religion came out of really basically this area here. You know, it's not, you know, Pennsylvania, but it came from Western New York and went through this region. And there's probably not that many, but quite a few that came from this Western, you know, New York and Northwest Pennsylvania and became Mormons out West. Their descendants are out there. But what I find weird about it is it's different than the rest of American culture in a lot of ways, and how they believe that they become their own God. And they borrow a lot from the Freemasons, you know, a lot of their beliefs and whatnot. And it really, Freemasons aren't a religious belief. They're just a fraternity, but like the handshakes and the ceremonies and stuff, that's all the
secret stuff.
Yeah. The secret stuff. That's all Freemasonry. He just stole from it, you know? And it's like, he made, you know, it's kind of like Scientology where, what was his name? L. Ron Hubbard just, you know, borrowed a lot of older stuff and just tried to wrap it in a new package. But no, I just think that, you know, it's an interesting thing. And then you hear the stories of people leaving, and those stories about people leaving, I think, are most interesting to listen to, because sure, you could say they have some biases, but when you look at the commonality between all these stories, I think that's where the truth is. Huh. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so
do they outlaw people that leave? I mean, do they
don't
shun them?
They don't shun them as much, but they do, they can. They sometimes do. They kind of back away from them.
Just don't want to hang out with them.
Yeah. But it's not as strict probably as what the Jehovah's Witness do or what the Amish do.
Crazy, yeah.
But I think, you know, when you start realizing.
Well, Scientology is that way too. If you try to leave, boy, they just went after you.
Yeah. If you really think about it, you know, the true lines between a cult and a not a cult is how much they try to keep you from leaving. And I think cults are ones that prevent, if you're they're trying to prevent you from leaving, that's really weird. And if your belief system or whatever ideology, let's say it's even a political ideology, if it's so wrong for you to leave that ideology, religious or political, then, and you become willing to use violence or coercion, then that tells me you're part of a cult. I think that's kind of my definition of a cult, at least, is how easy it for
well,
is
who
it
was
for
that leave? Guy down there in Jonestown or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't want nobody to leave. He made them all drink Kool-Aid or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Killed them all.
He was a socialist, yeah. Yeah. He wow. And, you know, people will say, oh, he was a Christian socialist. I'm like, well, no, he even admitted that he was an atheist. If people would believe in atheism, then he wouldn't have to be teaching what he had to teach. And so it's even his own words, he was not really a Christian.
Pretty nasty dude.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, that's the end result of socialism, you know, is it I'm talking about the ones that, you know, in Denmark, socialists, that's like, they're capitalists in Denmark. But in that ideology, yeah, he was a totalitarian leader that did not want people leaving. And he knew the gig was up. So we should do a show on that sometime.
Oh, that's an ugly one.
Yeah, it's an ugly one.
Terrible. Yeah. I mean, that guy was, I think he shot himself in the end. He didn't drink Kool-Aid. He shot himself.
He's too wimp, just like Hitler.
Like Hitler, yeah.
Yeah, too much of a wimp to go through with what he made everybody else do. Yeah,
I think Hitler snuck away to Australia, not Australia, Argentina.
Argentina, I don't
know.
The
rest of his boys.
Maybe. It's hard to say. Well, the one evidence of that is the Soviet Union claimed to have his skull and dental. And later on, they did a DNA test on it. And it actually became it was actually a woman's DNA, and not Hitler. And Hitler was obviously a man, you know. He's not a woman, you know.
I think his girlfriend went with him. She killed herself too.
Yeah.
And they supposedly burned them both in the courtyard or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because they could have just grabbed anybody. I mean, I'm not trying to. You know, there's a hype. You know, there's. Possibility. It was a crazy time. They were the Soviet Union was right on the edge of Berlin, and that's when they decided to end their lives. So
yeah, I know there was a pilot. His pilot wanted him to really badly. He says, "Come on, we still got a little chance. We can get out of here."
Yeah,
and supposedly he said no, but who knows?
Yeah, Who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, you think about it, you know, there was a corridor of airspace where it technically they could have escaped to Switzerland or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then after Switzerland.
A lot of them did. A lot of them did.
Yeah, that's a part of history that no one wants.
Well, a lot of them got hired by the Russians and got hired by the United States.
I mean, Operation Paperclip. Yeah,
I forget.
We did that with the Japanese
some of
too.
The names.
Yeah,
Butler.
Oppenheimer. Yeah, you know, not Oppenheimer. I'm sorry. Oppenheimer was.
He was one of us. He created the bomb.
Yeah, but the NASA program. You know, von Braun. You know, he was a former Nazi. But he was one that was like, you know, you have to think about this. It's kind of like in the Soviet Union. If you wanted to get anywhere in your career, you had to become a party member of, let's say, in Soviet Union, you had to become a party member of the Communist Party. And the same kind of reigns in, and I'm not defending Nazis at all. You know, I'm part Jewish. So when I'm saying this, it's just historical. You know, if you wanted to become anything in your career, you had to join the dominant party that was in a totalitarian government. So in Soviet Union, you had to become a communist. Party member, card-carrying member, and the same thing in the same vein with Nazi Germany, you had to become a card-carrying Nazi, you know. And it's kind of like the workers' unions. They had the Soviet Union. You had to, if you wanted to go anywhere in your career, you had to join the workers' union. And the same thing in Nazi Germany. They didn't get rid of the unions. They got rid of the private unions and made a government union, just like the communists did. And this goes with the cult thing. If you want to get anywhere in the Mormons, for instance, you had to be ordained and cleared to go through. Same with Scientology, and Scientology has more levels, you know.
Well, it costs more too.
Yeah,
they want to make some money.
Yeah, I just you look at this and you see a lot of similarities in between religion and politics. I'm finding it with a totalitarianism. It don't matter if it's Soviet Union or Nazis or Mussolini or, you know, Franco in Spain. If you wanted to get anywhere, you had to
join the club.
Join the club. Yeah. and this reminds me of a lot of these cults. If you wanted to get anywhere in Mormonism or in Jehovah's Witness or in Scientology, you had to join that club and play the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's that way everywhere. Almost.
To a point, yeah. I would say in the United States it's
not. It wasn't that way with the Lutherans, because I went to Lutheran church when I was little.
No, yeah. Lutherans are pretty chill.
I think so. Yeah. It seemed that way to me. I don't remember anything.
I would say most Christianity is not like this at all.
Methodist?
Yeah, Methodist, same thing.
Presbyterian. What's some of the other ones?
Catholic.
Yeah. Well, they're a little more stringent.
Yeah, they're a little more stringent, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Catechism and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But that's really just like Sunday school.
How about the Assembly of God? What's that all about?
It's similar to Lutheran. It's basically, you know, they believe similar to the Lutherans, but they have a little bit of, you know, believe that some of the gifts, so-called the spiritual gifts, are not dead. That's what they believe. So they believe in...
they roll around on the floor and stuff?
Sometimes, yeah, yeah.
Huh, holy rollers. Yeah, that's holy what rollers, I was thinking. Yeah. Jeez.
You know, there's stories to that, Bill, there, but it's like, you know, I don't always broadcast
down
it, but...
south. I went to Alabama, yeah. And I was surprised how many people were, what was it, Baptists, I think it was.
Yeah, a lot of Baptists.
Southern Baptists.
Yeah, they're a special bunch.
And they were pretty crazy. Yeah.
You know, there's a saying that if you don't want a Southern Baptist from drinking your beer, take two Southern Baptists on your boat. They won't drink your beer.
Why is that? Oh, because one will tell.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute. I don't know. Okay, let's hear what else you got here to enlighten Mormon culture here that we're digging into.
Yeah, we got some 10 facts here. We'll give you some 10 facts.
All right, that'll work.
An article posted in the New York Times a few years ago sent shockwaves throughout the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, otherwise known as the Mormon Church. Hans Madsen, a Swedish area authority equivalent to a cardinal overseeing the Church's works in Europe, provided an interview expressing doubts about the Church after learning of historical facts online that are never taught in Sunday school classes. Among the facts he found out were Joseph Smith's polygamous ways and some historical inconsistencies with the Church's scriptures, such as the Book of Mormon. That a high-ranking official had not been aware of these facts throughout his church membership reveals the great lengths to which the Mormon Church had gone to in hiding the many truths that paint the Church in a bad light. Number 10. Joseph Smith married girls as young as 14. While the practice of polygamy in the church's early days is fairly common knowledge today, Mormon leaders and average members normally justify that by saying that it was once done to protect the widows at a time when male Mormon members were dying due to persecution. Yet a quick search of Joseph Smith's genealogy at church-owned FamilySearch.org would prove that he was married to teenage girls. Documents further show that the youngest girl that Joseph Smith married was Helen Mar Kimball, who was 14 years old at the time of marriage. One would have to really stretch the truth to believe that these teenage girls were widows that needed to be taken care of. Number 9. Past prophets preached false doctrines. Joseph Smith has said that there are men living on the moon, describing them as over 6 feet tall and dressing like Quakers. Brigham Young even preached that there are people living on the sun. He also preached that Adam was God the Father and that black people are descendants of Cain and their skin color is a curse from God. Joseph Fielding Smith, another Mormon prophet, said in 1961 that no man will ever reach the moon. These and various other statements made by Mormon prophets have all been proven to be false over time. So how could one accept that these men are true prophets of God when just about everything they say is wrong? Number 8. Joseph Smith used peepstones to translate the Book of Mormon. The church has been deceiving members about the manner Smith translated the Book of Mormon. In paintings commonly seen in Mormon scriptures and pamphlets, Smith is depicted translating from the gold plates as Oliver Cowdery transcribed his dictation. The truth is that the plates were not even used in the translation process. He merely used two peepstones that he placed in a hat. He would then bury his face in the hat and dictate whatever he purportedly saw there. The stones in a hat method is even acknowledged by current Mormon apostle Russell M. Nelson in an obscure 1992 talk for Mission Presidents that can actually still be found in the church's official website. It is also worth noting that these are the same stones he found while digging a well for Mason Chase and the same stones he used for treasure hunting. So while he may have been a fraud, at least he believed in the power of recycling. Number 7. Temple rituals were copied from the Freemasons. Joseph Smith became a Freemason in March of 1842. In May of 1842, he introduced what is now known as the Temple Endowment Session. The Temple Endowment Session is among the most secretive rituals in the Mormon Church. Unlike other rituals such as baptisms or the administration of the sacrament, bread and water, members are not allowed to discuss the endowment in public. During an actual session, members perform rituals involving secret handshakes and passwords, all necessary to be allowed entry into the celestial kingdom where God, the Father, and Son live. What they don't know is that these rituals were heavily borrowed from the Freemasonry, almost word for word. The few members who know about the Masonry connection would defend it by saying that the Freemasons in turn copied their ritual from King Solomon's Temple. Yet even the church's most prominent apologetic site, Fair LDS, would refute that, admitting that what went on in Solomon's Temple had absolutely nothing in common with the Masonic rituals or the Mormons' endowment session. Number 6. The Kinderhook plates was a hoax. The Kinderhook plates are 6 brass plates that allegedly contained ancient characters. These plates were found by locals in Kinderhook, Illinois, along with a skeleton. Smith, believing them to be genuine ancient artifacts, later translated a portion of the brass plate's writings, claiming that it tells the story of the skeleton back when he was less skeletal and far more alive. According to Smith, he was a descendant of Ham through the loins of Pharaoh. In 1980, however, scientists examined the plates and determined that they were not ancient at all. They were eventually proven to be nothing more than a simple hoax. After this discovery, Mormon apologists tried to put a spin on it by saying that Smith never actually tried to translate it. Yet, in pages 372 to 379 of the Mormon's History of the Church book, Smith did confirm that he translated the plates, discussing the details of the translation in the aforementioned pages. Number 5. There are multiple accounts of the first vision. There is no middle ground. Joseph Smith talked with the Father and the Son, or he didn't. If he didn't, then we are embraced in a great fraud. A terrible fraud. That's a quote from Gordon B. Hinckley. The first vision, as known today in Mormon records, is an account of the literal appearance of God as both the Father and the Son to Joseph Smith in the spring of 1820. Today it holds an important place in the Mormon Church's official history, yet this event wasn't actually taught in the church until 1842, 22 years after it was supposed to have happened. Records also show that there are 9 versions of the account. Among the inconsistencies seen when compared side by side include Smith's age at the time it happened, the place where he received the vision, the personage he saw, and the instructions he received. One would think that remembering the details of such a remarkable experience would not have been that hard. But the inconsistencies of the multiple first vision accounts, and the fact that it was not even mentioned in the church's early years, cast doubts upon the validity of Smith's claims. Number 4. Church leaders were deceived by Mark Hoffman. One of the most embarrassing episodes in recent church history is that involving convicted murderer and counterfeiter Mark Hoffman. Hoffman sold what he asserted to be official church documents that he found. Among them included what he claimed was the original Anthem transcript, a piece of paper containing characters that Joseph Smith copied from the gold plates, an 1825 Joseph Smith holograph detailing Smith's exploits as a treasure hunter and practitioner of black magic, and the infamous Salamander letter, supposedly a letter written by Martin Harris claiming that it was a white salamander and not an angel that appeared to Joseph Smith in 1823. Church leaders such as eventual prophet Gordon B. Hinckley and current apostle Dallin H. Oakes were tricked into believing those were genuine, shelling out thousands of dollars to purchase them, and even defending the contents of the documents in pulpit talks. Of course, it would be proven later, when Hoffman was convicted of murder, that these documents were nothing more than forgeries created by Hoffman to make a fool out of the church leaders and earn a profit in the process. Number 3. The facts surrounding the death of Joseph Smith. Mormon church members sing hymns portraying Joseph Smith as a martyr who died for his faith. It is never taught in classes that he was actually imprisoned for destroying a newspaper printing press as retaliation for negative press about him. While in prison, he removed his garments, the Mormon magic underwear, and instructed the others in the jail with him to do the same. Mormons are also not aware that he had a gun and killed 2 people shortly before he was shot to death. He also made the Masonic symbol for distress as a last-ditch effort to save his life. Certainly not the lamb to the slaughter that the Mormons like to describe his death as. Number 2. The Book of Abraham has been proven to be false by Egyptologists. In 1835, Joseph Smith purchased a scroll containing Egyptian hieroglyphs from a traveling showman named Michael Chandler. He then proceeded to examine the scroll, claiming that it contained writings of Abraham, and he translated it into now what is known as the Book of Abraham. In 1966, several fragments of the original scroll that Smith used resurfaced. With the discovery of the Rosetta Stone, Egyptology had advanced profoundly by this time, and Egyptologists were able to validate whether Smith's translation of the scroll was accurate. Turns out the scroll was merely a common Egyptian funerary text that had absolutely nothing to do with Abraham. As with the Kinderhook plates, this put into question Smith's credibility as a divinely aided translator. Egyptologist Dr. James H. Breyerstedt of the University of Chicago said, "Joseph Smith's interpretation of them as part of a unique revelation through Abraham, therefore, very clearly demonstrates that he was totally unacquainted with the significance of these documents and absolutely ignorant of the simplest facts of Egyptian writing and civilization." Number 1. Evidence against the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon is often called the keystone of the Mormon religion. The validity of the church's claim as the one true church and Joseph Smith as the chosen prophet of God hinges upon whether the book is really an ancient record translated by the power of God or not. The problem is that the book has failed under scrutiny on many, many levels. It has been well documented that the Book of Mormon contains various anachronisms. Heavy plagiarism from the King James Bible is also apparent, including translation errors. Up to this day, the geographical location of the events of the book has not been located, and no supporting archaeological evidence has ever been discovered. Perhaps the most damning evidence against the book is the fact that DNA testing disproved its claim that a Jewish family who left Jerusalem in 600 BC to settle in the New World are the principal ancestors of the American Indians. With that, there simply is only one logical conclusion that could be made about the Book of Mormon: that it is, in fact, a 19th century fiction manufactured by Joseph Smith. Therefore, this makes all the other claims, along with this entire religion, just a fabrication.
Just a fabrication. Is that the final summary of the Mormons? Just a fabrication?
We got one more we can use that is at the very end. I think this is kind of an educational thing. You know, I've read into it.
Do you know any Mormons?
I've met quite a few. And, you know, I'll tell you the truth, I read the Book of Mormon.
I wonder if they got an audio book of that.
Oh, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
I have to say, there's one positive that I can say out of the Mormons, because they believe that they can baptize someone that's dead. And,
well, that's kind of handy.
And that person can become and go to heaven, we'll call it. But they believe that that person can become their own God down the road.
Even though they're dead?
Even though they're dead. So what the positive, and this sounds like a weird thing, is I'm not saying that's the positive. What the positive is, they do extremely heavy ancestry research. So
yeah, I heard that too. Yeah.
So it's in a lot of ways a positive for me, because I do a lot of genealogy research, and they keep very detailed records of ancestors. And, you know, I didn't realize how many, let's say fourth or fifth cousins of mine that probably back in the 1830s, 40s or 50s, went west. And,
they stopped at Salt Lake City.
No, they became Mormons and went west with Joseph Smith. Some of them probably went to Missouri.
I don't think Joseph Smith got any farther west than Illinois.
No. Yeah, Illinois. Yeah. But you see what I'm saying is, like, I do have some distant family members that, you know, that went west, and they weren't direct probably. But my point is that, you know, this really kind of in a way is a positive for me, because I'm able to do a lot of research because of this church. And so I'm thankful for that. But the reason why they do it's a little bit odd to me, because I know why. Every person that they research and find in their ancestry, even going back, you know, 500 years ago, they're going to their temple or church and praying for them and doing a baptism for the dead of that person 500 years ago, so they become Mormon. And to me, that's very odd, because, you know, the person could, let's say they were a very devout Christian, let's say this person 500 years ago, very devout Christian, you know, did not believe in Mormonism, and they're praying them in. And it's like, how do you know that person's okay with that? You know, they're dead, but let's say their spirit's on. Living on, and you think they're going to be okay with that, but you don't know that. You're just they're assuming that. But anywho, I just find that one little thing that they're doing is keeping all that research. It's very beneficial to me, so I'm using it. I'll admit it, but I don't agree with why they're doing it. It's just an odd thing, you know. Well,
I met a Mormon once.
Oh yeah,
her name was Marie Osmond.
Oh yeah,
what a fruitcake.
Yeah.
Oh jeez. But she was in charge of the show, though. I mean, she bossed everybody around pretty good.
Was she talented?
Yeah, she could sing. Yeah. And she was a little bit nutty. I mean, she didn't know what she was doing as far as sound. She'd give me all these hand signals, you know, for adjusting the monitors, and she'd give me all these signals, and I'd go looking for a button, and then I'd look up at her because I was going to turn the button, and she'd give me the okay sign. I said, well, geez, I didn't do anything. But she was okay with it. So I got some of her crew members over there. I said, hey, watch this. And they said, yeah, we know. She's an idiot. So even her own band members and the roadies and stuff that traveled with their group, they all knew she was nuts.
Yeah.
And they weren't afraid to admit it. And she bossed her husband around something awful.
That's rough.
Oh, she'd wait till he was clearing the other end of the amphitheater, and then she'd say, oh, honey, I need some water. And he'd have to run down. I told her, I said, I'll get it for you. She said, oh, no, he'll do it, he'll do it. And I said, okay, whatever. So he'd have to run all the way down and fetch her a little bottle of water. Oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
It's like, geez, oh man. You want to marry her. Holy cow.
You know, how many people are married to a spouse like that or dating a spouse like that? I don't know.
Probably millions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Boy, she's just daffy. That's all. Just very pleasant, you know, very nice and everything. But
so she wasn't like Hillary Clinton, don't look me in the eyes.
No,
kind of thing.
It wasn't one of those. There's guys like that. Barry Manilow, you weren't no eye contact
really?
There. Yeah, even the board members at the Hammond Hospital, we did a video presentation up there, and that was one of the rules: don't look any of the board members direct. Don't make eye contact. I said, well, how do I know which one's who? You know,
yeah,
I don't
know. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Hillary Clinton, don't make eye contact. Then she called my daughter and said, what's that effing kids doing out there? I said, hey, one of them effing kids is my daughter. And the Secret Service guys jumped all over me. I said, oh, okay, out of here. Let's get away from her. And they said the same thing. We know she's nuts. But boy, what a nasty woman.
It's just, to me, you think when people get to that level of famous, that they are no longer connected to the average person anymore. They're kind of in a bubble of yes men and yes women, just giving them yes, 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 and there's no to them.
Why do they got
to
be so goofy?
That's why I think it's happening. Ugly. I think there's the disconnect. They think that if anyone says no to them, you know, they're lost on it. They never hear no. I think that's part of the problem. They need to hear no more.
And Barry Manilow, he's just a nutcase.
Yeah,
what a. You catch him on 18th and Holland, boy, they'd beat the snot out of him. Quick.
Yeah.
Jeez. Oh, shoot. But another one was, who was that? Steve Perry?
Yeah.
Journey, I think.
Yeah.
Singer. They picked him up at the airport. He's all wrapped up in scarves and things. He didn't want his throat to get cold or something. I mean, he was real worried about catching something. Oh, brother, another fruitcake. Here we go. Oh, shoot. I had to protect his voice. Oh, man. I don't know. I guess it's valuable, I suppose. I don't know. But just think living like that. Holy cow.
It's a different world for sure.
Jeez.
I kind of look at the artists that kept their sanity and were able to have still talk to people. And I look up to them. Like, there's a few of them out there you can see.
Yeah, there's a lot of entertainers that are just super
down to
nice
earth,
people.
Yeah.
Super nice people, but a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. you have to look at the ones that keep it real and keep it down to earth and kind of like, wow, that's that's abnormal to what most famous people do. It lets them get to their head and, you know, the media, of course, sometimes paints it wrong, but there's some out there that I'm really impressed by that they can keep it, especially the ones that used to be child stars. You think about being a child star and how weird that has to be, you know, being raised that way and your childhood is basically warped by fame and, you know, money and all the corruption.
Yeah,
it's a
different thing. But I mean, there's so many good people, you know, Roy Clark.
Right.
John Denver was super nice.
I heard about John Denver. He was super nice.
His promoters and his manager, they were total idiots.
Right.
But John was wonderful.
I heard John Denver would actually listen to people talk.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something, you know, you think about that still. Again, how many people that you know that are famous that actually sit there and listen to what you had to say?
Yeah, you know? He was a good, he was just a super nice guy. You know, always smiling, you know, always smiling. Yeah. Who's that comedian, George Carlin?
Yeah,
he was right straight down. He wasn't a funny guy off stage. He's just a normal.
I heard some people say he was kind of grumpy off stage sometimes too. Not at people, but just had like a general like depressive state kind of.
Well, that could be. I mean, you know,
but he wasn't like angry at anybody. You know, he was just kind of laid back in a lot of ways. You know, there's Patrice O'Neill. He was another one that I looked up to. I looked up as a comedian that died too young, and he was always down to earth, and he'd roast anybody just as a joke.
Yeah.
He was a funny guy, you know. There's some odd ones out there, but
Smothers Brothers. Remember them?
Yeah, I heard about them.
The one that acts stupid on stage was really the nasty, bossy one off stage. You know, behind the scenes, he ran everything.
And, oh yeah.
He was ugly. You don't want to even be around him.
Right.
But one was Tommy, and the other one was I don't know what his name was. But he was nice. He was supposedly the smart one on stage, but he was just nice, average guy. You know, nice, pleasant person. But that Tommy one, I think he just died. Matter of fact.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And he was ugly. Ooh. Terrible.
But besides John Denver, who else was someone that you thought was just really out there, genuinely nice person?
Gloria Estefan, I remember her. She was super nice, super nice. And, of course, she had, you know, 20 Cubans in her band. So, I mean, it was you didn't know what they were saying. But she was super nice and very talented, good singer.
Yeah.
All the harmonies came from a keyboard, though. So, really? I heard all this harmony. I didn't see anybody singing. And it was a guy with an emulator playing along. She was singing with that.
Was she quite talented, you think?
Oh, yeah. Very good singer, yeah. A lot of good, talented people. Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know. Right. Paul was a super nice guy, handshake, and Mary always got a hug from her. I did so many shows with her, probably 20 or more.
Right.
And every time I saw her, she just run right over and give me a hug. But Peter, I mean, he was friendly, but he was an idiot.
He was always
nitpicking at this and that and everything. I said, just sing, will you? I said, you know, I'd say, if you want to turn these knobs, and I'll do the singing.
Ah. You know,
he was just and he was real friendly on stage to the audience. But as soon as he got off stage and the kids and whatever want to come around and get his autographs, he'd, get away from me. You know, he didn't want nothing to do with anybody.
Yeah,
I'd say, wow, what a two-faced guy that
Do you think he was just burned out? Maybe even. I mean, think about.
I don't know. He's just so full of himself. You know,
it's kind of like a comedian. You think about the difference between music and comedy. Comedians constantly have to create new stuff because you don't want to hear the same joke three times. But a musician, they can sit there and play three songs every, you know.
Oh, they do the same thing. Yeah. The same shows, same jokes, everything's the same.
It's just kind of
like. Time and time again.
But when you get tired of doing that, I mean.
No, sure they do.
I mean, I would. I would get.
And some of them get cranky. Yeah. Who's that? Who's that real famous country western guy?
Garth Brooks.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. Hmm. Unbelievable. I understand why his wife left him. I mean, holy smokes, what a nasty. And his whole band took right after him. They were all that same way.
I just think I couldn't imagine. I'm not trying to like condone their behavior, but I'm like, I know personally, I couldn't stand doing the same song every city you go to for 20 years. That'd be nuts.
Well, that's like the Rolling Stones or something. They did play the same songs over and over and
wouldn't
over.
Wouldn't that be like, God? But really, how hard is it? I mean, you're making millions while doing it. And it's kind of like that Dire Straits song, you know, get a blister on your finger, you know. It's like, oh, that's the biggest worry that you have. And it's like, it's completely disconnected. It's a weird job to have. And then, but you have to go through the monotony.
They don't, you know, these shows and stuff, they don't lift a finger.
No.
They don't do anything.
They got roadies for it. They got makeup artists.
They got guitar specialists. And, you know, all these people do everything for them, you know, everything.
Right.
They just don't. It's a wonder they don't get somebody to eat their food for them or something, you know. It's just crazy the way it is. And some of them get really nutty. I mean, they just.
That's a weird world to be in.
Now, you meet people like the Three Dog Night. I remember doing them, doing a show with them a long time after, like 30 years after they were famous.
Right.
Same exact people, nobody thought they were better than anybody else.
Right.
You know, they just were just down to earth, nice guys.
Just dog.
Super easy to deal with.
Just doggy guys, right?
Yeah. Just Two Dog Night now, one of them died.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if I sat down and went through all, trying to list all the people that I actually worked with, you know, and I had to do rehearsals and do the shows and everything, I could write a book that just knock your socks off.
Sure.
I mean, oh, man, would that be something. I'd probably get sued.
Well, you could just write in the beginning, this is my opinion.
That's my opinion.
You don't have to like make it like this is the facts.
Yes.
Like, that way you can't get sued because it's like, you know, this is just my subjective view, you know.
Well,
but I think a lot of things with that, going back, you going through your history that you've seen all these people, it's there's the good and ugly and the bad, right?
Oh, boy.
But the reality is like they got famous for a reason. And
well, they had a talent.
Yeah.
Most of them all had a talent.
Right.
They were good at something, you know,
right.
Whether singing or playing guitar or whatever. But boy, some of them just took a left turn someplace. And
you've seen it during COVID when they couldn't perform, right? How crazy the artists were getting. They were putting out stuff that was like really stupid. Some of it was really stupid. Like they tried redoing We Are the World, if you remember that song back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that was about like poverty and AIDS and stuff when they first put that out. But here's the thing. When they tried redoing it during COVID and
they're doing like, you know, video clips of each artist in their home saying we are the world, and they're like in their multi-million dollar houses and everything, and it's like, wait a second here, you are very disconnected from what everybody's facing. Of course, you can survive sitting in your multi-million dollar house fine during COVID, but there's other people that need to work.
I tell you, one thing you got to look at is some of these people died, you know. Sure. Some of these pretty famous people died.
Right.
And you should see the mess they leave behind as far as their family fighting over the millions.
That's the scary part, yeah.
They're just squabbling and fighting, and the lawyers just sucking it all up, just eating every bit of it.
It's really tragic when you see different families fighting over things. Like, I'm not a huge supporter of like Britney Spears, but personally, I think she's nutty. Okay, but she was under a conservation ship where her father had legal guardianship over her because of her mental issues that she was facing. And the California state government put that over her because she was having, like, I think bipolar. I'm not sure what mental illness she was having, but she was having some severe issues. And it turned into this huge legal battle to basically get her off that guardianship program, the conservatorship. And it's just really crazy seeing families go through all that to argue like that. I just, to me, that's so far out there.
Well, lawyers are, you know, just sucking it all up.
Sure. I mean,
they're just eating them alive. There was one other thing. A lot of these guys, performers, were alcoholics.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them, like going to Chautauqua or, you know, different places not too far from here.
Right.
They got drunk a lot.
You know, I believe
Tom T. Hall. Who's that big shot guy, Glenn Campbell?
Yeah.
Hall, was he plastered? And then he was at Chautauqua, and he ran off the stage after about a half an hour, and they wouldn't pay him. And he had to come back on the stage and do another 40 minutes or whatever it was to get paid. And he was snockered something awful. He was terrible. And they were upset up there. They didn't... They had a big fight with him, but you know there's quite a few of them that had that problem,
right?
And Tammy Wynette, she was another one. They never knew what they were going to get, whether she was going to be sober or blasted,
right?
And they were always afraid that, you know, because she's canceled a lot of shows,
right?
Because of that, and so they. Towards the end there, nobody wanted to hire her.
now I can't remember. I think you might have said that you did Alison Krauss. Am I right?
It sounds familiar, but I don't recall.
I
don't think so.
Uh-uh. From what I've heard from about her, she's really down to earth artist and not like egoistic at all. And I think, you know, she's talented, very talented singer, and. I just used to think these would be role models. Like, this is how you approach your fans. This is how you, and I say, you know, there's a certain give and take. There's some artists that hate their fans, and I can understand. Some fans can be really weird, so you get kind of jaded in a way by fans being, you know,
sometimes there's just too many of them. And...
Right. But at the same time, you have to kind of like realize, wait a second, they're the ones paying for me to have all this. This wonderful things I have. And so some ways you owe some thanks to them, I guess.
Is the right, so.
You would think, but I've seen that a few times. But
the country Western stars, they'd make a good buck off of that, because after the show, they'd get out there on their tables
and
they'd sell pictures of themselves in their swimsuits and stuff. Lee Hazelwood?
Yeah.
Got that American something about that song. Something about America or something. I don't know. He was a draft dodger, number one. And number two, he's out there selling pictures of himself in his underwear. And he was there for an hour or more.
Oh, wow.
And people lined up for I just remember that, thinking, this skinny wackadoo. I mean, he was, what a jerk. I mean, he was a nice enough guy. He was pleasant and everything. He wasn't hard to work with.
Right.
But he was... What a ham hock. I mean, just, oh, shoot. Very crazy. He had his son playing drums in his band, and his son had really big hair, gigantic hair.
Right.
It was funny. there's my cough for the day.
Yeah. Got that one.
All right. Well, I don't know. You think we did enough BSing for today?
Yeah, we did about an hour's worth, you know.
You got any more Mormon stuff? The Mormons are out. I'm not joining them
either.
Yeah,
I think we could be done on the Mormons. We did enough, yeah.
Okay. Well, three up and three down. So the Scientology's out. Jehovah's Witness is out. Mormons are out. Because we've got to find something that might sound good to join.
Yeah.
Is there somebody out there?
The Church of the Spaghetti Monster for you, Bill. You like spaghetti?
Yeah, sometimes.
There you go.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah.
Got to watch those. What is that? Carbohydrates or
something?
Yeah,
the carbs. Yeah. You got to watch it. Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to run a marathon, fine. I'll eat a lot of spaghetti. But
yeah. Not too much spaghetti before, because the spaghetti sauce will make you puke.
No.
Don't ask me how I know.
Yeah. Well, I remember I ran a marathon over in Ohio. And that's what they served, spaghetti.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Then after it was over, they gave you chocolate milk and I think it was a banana.
Yeah.
Chocolate milk and a banana.
Yeah.
And then they put that thing around your head, that thing with the metal on it, and said, did you finish? Mm. That was crazy. Things I've done.
Yeah.
Never again.
Yeah.
Of course, I can't now.
Did your ancestors ever think, boy, I just want to, you know, my descendants someday are going to go run a marathon? You know?
I don't know. It's
nothing wrong with it. Just, you know, you think about it. You know,
it's people, a whole different class of people, let me tell you. They're all talking and chatting. And
running.
When the thing starts and everybody's just chatting it, about a half an hour in, all of a sudden nobody's saying a word.
They're all
saving their breath. So they can keep going. Got real quiet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Hey, it's not everybody made it either.
Really?
They had a bus that come around behind you, and they'd pick you up if you're. I think they gave you 3 hours or something to finish it.
Oh, wow.
So that's how fast the bus went.
How many miles or how many kilometers was it?
26 miles. 26 miles in a minute.
You did 26 miles?
A little over that. A little 26.3 or something.
Oh, that's a true marathon then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I ran a half marathon too, but that was easy.
Right.
Or not easy, but made more sense.
Right, yeah.
Because there was too many hills over there in Akron.
Right.
But Roadrunner Marathon, as it was called. I still got the medal.
I used to run a 10-minute 2-mile in the Army, and I didn't even realize how fast I was going at the time until afterwards. And so I ended up being put into the A group, which is the fastest running group. And they run fast. So you do a 5-mile run and it's like, you're like, they're just pushing you. And I regretted it. I was like, crud, I should never do a 10-minute 2-mile again, because you're stuck.
If you're in the Army, you don't want to be up front. You don't want to be all the way in the back. You want to be right in the middle someplace.
Yeah. That was the biggest mistake I made, because being put into the A group meant you run the fastest. And I hated it because they're on your heels barking at you, basically.
Expected all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I just look at that and look back at that and thinking, boy, I could run. I could have a good endurance, but not anymore. My knees are bad, you know?
Yeah, so. My whole body's bad.
Well, we better wrap it up here.
Yeah, okay, that's enough. People are tired of us BSing.
Yeah, sometimes they like it, you know.
Yeah, sometimes, but they might have something to do. They gotta go to the store or something.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see you all next week.
Stay dry.
Hopefully it'll quit raining and warm up a bit.
Yeah, hopefully for Monday, too, you can watch the solar eclipse. That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the solar eclipse. Yeah. I think I'm going to stay home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drive.
You'll have about 90%.
They say a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of accidents because people are looking up in the sky while they're driving. Yeah. Oh, geez. Truck drivers.
They're expecting 40,000 people to come into Erie, and there's already 50 private planes coming to Erie.
Huh. Motels are probably booking.
Oh, they're booked beyond belief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Everything's booked. It's going to be busy. I would not go to Erie on Monday.
that'll be a big boost in the arm for Erie, because their tourism isn't all what it should be.
No, it's not kind of hard. Tourism. Yeah. Peninsula, I would not want to be on the peninsula that day either. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, right. You'd be stuck in a traffic jam out there.
Yeah.
Okay, Seth, see you all next week, and you know, stay warm and dry, and hope things warm up.
See ya.